was once a Rebbe who traveled from town to town. He had all the right garments, a colored bekatcher, shtamel, fur coat, but he didn't really behave like a Rebbe does. So some people decided to play a trick on him. He went to sleep at night, took off his garments, they took away his clothes, and they put instead of the clothes of a priest. He got up in the morning, and he wears his coat, he looks in the mirror, and he's shocked. He sees in front of him a priest. He was confused. Who is he? Is he a Rebbe or is he a priest? And he couldn't make up his mind. He decided, you know what, I'll go to a church and I'll see if I feel at home. So probably I'm a priest. But if everything is strange, I don't know how to read the books, then it must be that I'm a Rebbe. So he walks and he goes to the church. He opens a book like everyone else does, and he can't read it. He feels strange. He says, must be I'm a Rebbe. He closes the book, he walks out. Then there's a second thought. Perhaps he's a priest. And the fact that he couldn't read the books, maybe no one can read the books, and they all pretend like they read the book. So he's confused. Who is he? A Rebbe or a priest? Sometimes it's challenging to find out who we really are. But the mon was the right tool to help a person to think and bring a person to introspection and understand who he really is. It says about the mon, the man was a nisoyin for a person. What nisoyin was the man for a person? So the Asas Rebbe explains, when a person who wants to indulge himself in worldly pleasures, sometimes he's restricted doing so because his surrounding or his position he has. A Rebbe can't go in the pizza store and order himself a slice of pizza. But when a person ate the man, he could think whatever he wants, and that's the taste the man has. So he could pretend eating a dry piece of bread, but his mind is going around in all kinds of thoughts, which is not suitable for such a person. So the nisoyin for a person was, when no one knows what he's thinking, who are you? Are you a Rebbe or are you a priest? But this was only on the short term. On the long term, we know, as Chazal tell us, that the mon was only as near to the house of a person as a righteous person he was. So for tzaddik, the mon was right outside his house. But when people didn't have a good day, so the next day would see straight away, the mon was further away and had to walk sometimes to great distances to get their piece of mon. Bianca Galinsky explained once, Vayanchu Vayarivechu, Vayarivechu, why were they hungry when they had the mon? And he said that a person went out of his house and he was expecting to find the mon in front of his house, but it wasn't there. So he had to walk and walk and walk. And he's starting to get uncomfortable. People might ask him questions, where are you walking to? Where's your mon? So after walking a few minutes, he runs back home, empty-handed, and his wife asked him, where's the mom? He said, oh, I forgot, yesterday, but Tfilas Mincha, I took on myself to fast the next day. It was an easier way to get out of it than telling the truth. So it was truly Bayanchu Bayarivechu. As the Mefarshim explained, Leman Anoyzku, El Nisoyim, is not something which should hold the person back, rather it's an opportunity for him to grow. As the Mefarshim explained, when a teacher does a test to a student, he needs to see what he knows and what he doesn't, so he has to test him. The Boishim doesn't need to test the person, because the Boishim knows what a person knows and what he doesn't. And the Soin is there to give the opportunity for the person to take things which are his qualities, and to make it part of him. And therefore, the mon, on the one hand, was maybe not so comfortable for some people. But it was a nisoin. It helped the person tremendously. How amazing it is when a person can get up in the morning and have a true indicator of where he's holding. It might not be so comfortable, but it's something which can help a person greatly knowing himself. But for this, a person has to think. The Chofetz Chaim once asked someone, what taste did a man have when a person didn't have anything in mind? Nothing in mind. When a person thought about bread, it tasted like bread. When a person thought about meat, it tasted like meat. But what when a person didn't think anything? He just ate the man. And the Chofetz Chaim answered, as men tracht nicht, hat es nicht kein Tam. If a person doesn't think, then it's tasteless. So the man was there to teach a person to think, who am I? On a similar note, the parsha starts, V'hoyu ekev tishmon es ha-mitzvahis. And the psukim go on and on what happens to a person who ekev tishmon. And as Rashi explains, what does ekev mean? Rashi says, "Voye ekev tishmon imam mitzvois kalos shudam dosh ba'kevo tishmon." This pusik refers to specific kind of mitzvahs. The mitzvahs which are called ekev, which refers to heel of a person. Mitzvahs where a person tramples with his heel. Mitzvahs which are neglected. Mitzvahs which seem to be not so important. For these mitzvahs, where ekev tishmon, then there's a whole list of schar, which the Baruch Hashem would give to that person. The Sfasema says a beautiful explanation in Pekrovis. The Mishnah says, Hevei mechashel schar mitzvah k'negative sein. Again, a person should think schar mitzvah, the reward of a mitzvah, k'negative sein. And hefset mitzvah k'neged schur. Which means when a person has a choice of doing a mitzvah or an avera, sometimes the benefit of the mitzvah are not so straightforward. So we tell the person, make a cheshbon. You might enjoy the avera, but that's only very short, for a short while. But you are losing out on the great reward of a mitzvah. But Hashem said a different explanation. Have a mechashev schar mitzvah negative say though as follows. Imagine a person comes to you and asks the following question. I'll offer you 100 pounds, but don't put a tefillin today. Are you willing to forgo the mitzvah of tefillin for 100 pounds? You all would say, no, no way. How about 500 pounds? No. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000. Every person would have maybe different levels where he would start thinking. But I believe for a couple of thousand of pounds, we would all say, no way. In other words, you value the mitzvah of tefillin to at least, let's say, 10,000 pounds. Because you would be willing to forego 10,000 pounds and you would prefer to put on the tefillin. So you have a choice between a bag of 10,000 pounds or tefillin, you would choose the tefillin. So the question is being asked to the person, if you value tefillin to the extent that you're willing to forego 10,000 pounds for the tefillin and you put on tefillin every day, how would you feel if every day you would open your door and you would see on the front of your front door 10,000 pounds? It would be a very exciting day. You would go around with a smile, you'd be happy. But you just put on tefillin, which according to your own valuation, is at least worth 10,000 pounds. So why don't you have that same excitement? Why isn't the tefillin also, for you at least, a value of 10,000 pounds? Have a mechashev schar mitzvah. You should calculate the schar of the mitzvah negative, say, how much are you willing to lose out in order to do the mitzvah, and this should be at least the value the mitzvah has in your eyes. But for this, again, we need to think. As we tracht nicht, hat es nicht kein Tam. The story is being said about the Mashgiach, who, I think he went to Canada for his work, it was in the winter, and the shul was 3/4 of an hour drive away from where he was staying. And every day he went to shul, to daven, and came back, and then he went to the factories to check whatever he has to check. One day he gets up in the morning, and there was a terrible snowstorm, and he couldn't even open the door. He decided he'll wait half an hour, but it didn't get better, it only went worse. So after a while, he understood that there's no way to get to shul with such a storm. So he called up the emergency services. He knew they have special trucks, and he asked them, his emergency, he needs to get to that and that place, can they come with a truck to pick him up and bring him there? So they asked about what the emergency it is, and he explained, his towels and tefillin are there. They said, that's not an emergency. We come out for people who are in danger, but we won't come for you to get into the shul. However, if you want to pay the price, then we could do that. What's the price? $10,000. So you could choose, if you want to pay $10,000, we'll take you there. It was a lot of money. So he said, I'll call you back. He called up his roof and asked him, what should I do? If I'll pay the $10,000, I'll get to shul. But if I won't put on tefillin today. Am I required to pay that sum of money or not? So the roof told him, depends how much money you have. According to Haluchi, a person has to pay up to a fifth, 20% of his money in order to perform a mitzvah, a mitzvah saseh. Mitzvah lo saseh, a person has to lose all his money. A mitzvah saseh, up to a choymish, up to a fifth. So if you own $50,000, then the answer is yes, you have to do that. If you don't, then you don't have to do it. And he had $50,000 of savings. So it wasn't easy, but he called up this company and he said, please take me there, I'll pay you the price. He arrived a short time before Shkia. He quickly ran in the shul and he put on his tefillin. And he said, he never before had the same feeling when he put on tefillin. Suddenly, it had a totally different value. And not only that day, the next day as well. Because he paid $10,000 for it, so suddenly the mitzvah had a different value. There's a famous story about the Abtu Ruf, where Chuset came to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, I was once a successful businessman, but I lost everything. And I have a few daughters I need to marry off. And I have nothing. So the Rebbe said, you have nothing? What do you have? He said, he has 1 ruble, that's all he has. So the Rebbe said, Besedet, I'll be fine. Go out, and the first business deal that company comes across, do that deal, and all will work out well. He went out of his house, he traveled back home, and on the way, he stayed at the inn. And he saw there a few people sitting around the table, diamond merchant, and they were arguing, trying to make some deal, and he was looking, and looking and staring at them. One person gets up and says, what are you looking at? You also want to buy diamonds? He said, yes, I do. How much money do you have? 1 ruble. They started laughing, 1 ruble. I'm buying diamonds for 1 ruble. But then one of them said, I have an idea, you want to buy something, I have a good deal for you. I'll sell you my Olam Habu for 1 ruble. And he remembered the words of his Rebbe, the first deal that comes to your hands, go for it. He said, okay, I want you to sign it on the paper. So he took out the paper, and he was laughing and writing a contract, I'm sending you my Olam Habu. And then he paid him a ruble, and both were happy. This man who sold his Olam Habu went back home. And he said to his wife, I have to tell you a story what happened today. And he was so proud of his business deal. The wife said, what? You sold your Olam Habu? I don't want to live with you anymore. Go back and buy it. If not, you have to find yourself a different place. I don't want to be married to a husband who has no Olam Habu. He said it was a joke. He said, I don't care if it was a joke or not. Go back and buy it back. He went to that person and said, well, it was a nice joke, please give me back that paper. He said, no, a deal is a deal. You sold your Olam Habu, it's mine. And to make a long story short, he offered 5 ruble, 10 ruble, 100, 500, till he offered 1,000 ruble, which was the amount of money this person needed to help his daughters. And he said, okay, for 1,000 ruble, it's yours again. And he gave him the money, he gave him back the contract, he ripped it to pieces. And that person, instead of going home, went back to his Rebbe. And he told him the entire story and said, Rebbe, I have a question. Was this honest? How much was what was the value of the Olam Haba of that person? If it was 1 ruble, then when I bought it for a ruble, this was okay. But how could I sell it for 1,000 ruble? So my kaftus, I sold something which was 1 ruble for 1,000 ruble. And if the value of his Olam Haba was 1,000 ruble, so when I bought it for 1 ruble, it was my kaftus, it was never mine, so how could I sell it for 1,000 ruble? Rav said, no, no, no. This is not my kaftus. Because when you bought it for 1 ruble, that was the value of that Olam Haba. Why? Because that's how much a person valued his Olam Haba. Ruchnius, Olam Haba is valued according to how much a person appreciated it and what it means to that person. So when he sold it, there was only 1 ruble in his eyes, and that was the value. However, when he was willing to pay 1,000 ruble to buy it back, suddenly it had a different value in his eyes. It had different values in his eyes. Then the same Olam Haba was worth 1,000 ruble. Also mit Trachten, ich schaue das nicht ganz an. I would like to end with a thought about the Shiva de Nechemte, which is connected to this week's parasha as well. V'hoyu Ekev Tishmon, the Abderuf says that Ekev can mean also in the end. Ekev said the Mashiach. V'hoyu Ekev Tishmon, at the end, everyone will listen and everyone will do tshuva. And what happened? We hope sooner, but if not, it will happen later as well. V'hoyu Ekev at the end Tishmon. He also says, if you will listen, not now, later on, the Rebbeinu Shlomo, we ask you to take that into consideration and reward us now. Right? Take us now out of the gulus, because Ekev at the end, we will listen to you. So take this listening at the end, and this gulus should be already now, it should take us out of gulus. But how does that work? How does it work that the Eibshe should take something which will happen later, and this should be a schus already for now to go out of gulus? It reminds me of a story which was in the times of the Malsham, where there was a city or village which had a decree that soldiers would go in that village, and the law then was, when soldiers come, whatever they come, they can do whatever they want. They can go in all the houses, they can take over the houses, and therefore there was a terrible decree for that village from a physical but also from a spiritual level, because if soldiers come there, then it will be very difficult. So they sent a letter to a Rebbe and asked him for a bruchen. He should daven for them. So the Rebbe answered, I will, but on one condition. I want a large sum of money, not for myself, for tzedukah. If you will pledge a large sum of money, you'll get a bruchen, you'll see all will be fine. So they had no choice, and they collected this large sum of money. They gave it to the Rebbe gave a bruche, and a few days later they got a letter to say that the soldiers would go a different way, and this village was spared from that decree. They're all very excited. There were some cynical people who decided to look deep into the matter and see what really happened. They found out that this letter was written before the Rebbe gave his bruche. It took a few weeks till it arrives there, but it was written already before the Rebbe gave his book. So they said, we gave you the money on condition that your book would help. Your book didn't help. The letter was already written before you gave your book. So therefore, we want our money back. The Rebbe said, no, you gave the money for tzedukah, I want to use it for tzedukah. So they sent a question to the Maharsham and asked him, what's aluch? And the Maharsham proved that the Rebbe is right, and he brought a very interesting gemur in Ruches. Pusa Rabbi Lezer benoy shel Rabbi Yoyse Aglidi b'chvoy dachsani. V'durash. Rabbi Lezer, the son of Rabbi Yoyse Aglidi, said a drush about the importance of having guests in someone's house. It says, V'yivurech Hashem es oived edem agiti b'avur uroin ho'elokim. Oyved Edom Magiti had for 3 months the urn in his house, and the Eibishter blessed him for that. We'll see soon what that means. Weil du im Kabel kommst. Und mehr Ohren schlägt euch auch an, und wir schossen Ohren, das ist ein easy guest, das ist ein eat, das ist ein drink. Hallo, kibbet, wir riebet's le funnel. Just need to sweep the floor in front of him. Kach, and this is the reward. Hama reach, tamen chuchem, bis euch beise. Oma achilo, oma schkeiu, oma neyu mene chusab, alachas kam bekam a person would be blessed. Which bruche did he receive? Ma yi bruche shebichloi? Oma abhude baaz vide zu chumas vishmoyne kaliseyu shiol vishishu shishu bekeres. All the women which were in his house, all had six children at once. Asle ma'asham, how long was the woman in that house? 3 months. So they all had six babies at once for a period of 3 months. Definitely they were expecting already before that, before the woman came there. A woman can't give birth in 3 months, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, but not 3 months. That means that they were carrying already six babies before he did his mitzvah. How could it be? Must be that the Rebbe Yishem took the future into consideration. And the Rebbe Yishem rewarded them already for what would happen. So too, perhaps the schus of the tzedukah that you gave and the bruch of this tzaddik was the cause that already 2 weeks earlier the king, whoever it is, should write a letter that the decree should be cancelled. And therefore, the money should stay where it is and you're not entitled to get the money back. If you look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu asked the Ribono Shel Olam, Vayomer Moshe el Elokim, Mi Anochi Ke'elech el Paroi? Who am I to take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim? And even if I am worthy, V'chi Oitzias Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim, says Rashi, V'af im Chushvani, even if I am worthy, Ma Zuch Yisrael Sh'te'usa Lehem Nes V'yitzil Mitzrayim? Which schus do Klal Yisrael have to go out of Mitzrayim? What's the answer of the Ribono Shel Olam? Vayomer, כי אימך וזלכו אויס כנוכי שלחתי איכו ויציאחו עשאו ממצרים תארדו נס אלוקים על ההר הזה says Rashi וששואלתו מה סחוס יש לישראל you're wondering which סחוס to call Israel have שייצו ממצרים דובר גודל יש לי על היצוע זו שרי עשידם נקב לתויר על ההר הזה לסרויף שלוש החודושים שייצו ממצרים because the Eden would receive the Torah 3 months later after it's Mitzrayim Therefore, this is the schus the Eden have already now to be taken out of Mitzrayim. But here again, we ask, Kabbalah Satorah, was their choice? When the Rebbe Yishem says, Tavdenes Elokim al Ahor Hazeh, then it's all done. If the Rebbe Yishem says something would happen, it would happen. So therefore, the Eivshe, Kufa Lem Ha'akik, he gives and accepted the Torah. True, they said Nasa Venishim, but even without Nasa Venishim, but would it receive the Torah anyway? Because the Rebbe Yishem said, So which schus did the Rebbe Yishem take for the Eden already 3 months earlier when they were in Mitzrayim for them to be taken out of Mitzrayim? As Rashi says, the schus is the schus of Kabbalah Satorah, but that wasn't their schus. The Shem Yishmuel brings a Gemurah we learned not so long ago in Sanhedrin, where the Gemurah says that Ischaze l'Ravashi Menashe b'chalm. Menashe revealed himself in a dream to Ravashi. Ravashi said, he said in the Shia, let's talk tomorrow about our friend Menashe. So Menashe came to his dream and he said, Chavrich v'chavrid avucha kur islam. You called me your friend, your father's friend. Let me see if I'm your friend, before I call. Meheche bois le mishra amoitzi, from where do you have to cut? He asked him, from where do you have to cut? And he said, v'uche amoitzi lech minuiz, where do you have to cut the bread? And Ravashi couldn't answer, and he told him where you have to cut the bread. So Ravashi told him, Umalei ma'acha decha kimusu kurahai, ma'itam ekopol chisul avidezuot. If you were such a chuchem, why did you serve avidezuot to the great extent? Umalei yehavis husam, if you would be there, havis nukit b'shipule glime v'urat basur. You would lift up your garments and you would run to the avidezuot. What is he telling him? Says the Maral, quoted by the Shem Yishmuel. What he told him is, the Yetzirah of Yitzur was great in my times, and therefore you can't understand. But one thing I can tell you. I didn't want to serve Yitzur, but I felt I have no choice. The temptation was too great. However, if there was any reason for me to delay that, or not to serve in the zoo, I would be very excited. If there would be some thorns on the road, and my garment would be stuck on these thorns, I would be happy and excited, because it would delay my serving in the zoo. But if you would be there, you would lift your garments, you wouldn't want to have anything that holds yourself back. Mushlim Adubra Doim, a person who wants to eat non-kosher food, and he goes to the shop, and he sees that the shop is closed. One person would be very excited. He doesn't want to eat non-kosher food, but the temptations are too great. What can he do? But now the shop is closed, he's very happy. However, the other person would be very upset because it's not just he's forced to do so, he wants to do so. And therefore, everything which would hold himself back would be upsetting for him. Says Hashem Yishmur, the same thing is also for Avodas Hashem. Something we do because we are forced. We are forced because perhaps peer pressure or any other reason. However, how would we feel if there were things which would hold ourselves back? Person goes on holiday and he's happy to have a minion, he's able to double as a minion. He gets a text, today there are only 9 people, there won't be a minion. One person will be very excited and sleep in. There's no minion, he doesn't have to daven with a minion. And the other person will be upset because he would love to daven with a minion. So sometimes when we are forced to do something or we have no choice, still our excitement makes a big difference if it's something that we want to do or something we are forced to do. So the Baruch Rebbe explains that the Yidden in Mitzrayim, they were told, Taven es lekim al ha'or hazeh, you will receive the Torah, it won't be your choice. But what would the Yidden do? And he brings it from different Rishonim, the Ran, the Rashbo, Shibul Aleket. The Yidden in Mitzrayim started to get excited, will receive the Torah, and they started counting the days. Starting to count the days, when will be that time that we'll receive the Torah? And this is the reason for, according to these Rishonim, for Sfira Soime. So therefore, they didn't have a choice to receive the Torah. However, the excitement was their choice. And when they had that excitement, so whatever would happen afterwards, even if it's forced, it's as if it's their own schiz. And therefore the Boishim says, that's yours, even you are forced, but it was your choice. It was your choice to be excited about it. It was your choice to wait longingly for that moment when you receive the Torah. That will happen anyway. It won't be our choice. Like the Abba said, we'll do tshuva anyway. However, if we are mitzapet Yeshua, if we are excited about Yeshua, that will happen anyway, then the Boish will take this schus, which will happen later, and will become our schus. So therefore, a person might ask himself, the Mashiach didn't come till now. If the previous generations weren't great enough to bring Mashiach, how would we? And the answer is, who says it would be your schus? Mashiach will come anyway. We hope earlier. But if not, if it doesn't come, Achishenu will come b'itoy. However, our excitement, our longing, the tzibisa Yeshua, this will make the Bias HaMashiach our schiz, and in this schiz, the Boish will take us out of the goodness. Yeah.